And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Sam Amick from The Athletic, and you can listen to me, Fred Katz, and Anthony Slater break down the inside story of what is happening in the NBA. Latest news, trades, signings, all of the above. Latest action on the floor. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Athletic NBA Show and listen to Tampering every Tuesday.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Guys, I got to say, Bucks in four. It's a sweep. The Bucks are just better.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writer.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Welcome to a Basketball Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm here with three kings. Just kidding. Nah, it's just Jay King and me and James Edwards. Two Edwards. We got two DMPs
way too
today.
Many damn Edwards is.
Right? You're not going to get jumped, I promise. We got two DMPs, Zach and Dave. Get to breather. Today, we're going to talk about the Hawks still in game one. We're going to talk about game seven. We're going to talk about James Harden's update, Jason Kidd and the Blazers, along with Damian Lillard. We're going to give a predictions for the Jazz Clippers and Nuggets Suns. And then from there, just cover most of the NBA. So I wanted to start off with this Hawks Philadelphia 76ers matchup. Jay, what did you see out there?
I mean, I did not expect the Hawks to come in and steal game one of that series, especially if you told me Joel Embiid was going to play and Joel Embiid was going to have a big game. I would not have anticipated it going that way. But the 76ers, there was nothing they could do for a while. Like, they had a lot of trouble guarding the Hawks. And I didn't see it coming like that. The end was crazy, man. I thought that was like an NCAA tournament ending.
That was a high school press.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
like, it really was. Like, I have flashbacks to like the 14 seed trying to come back against the 3 seed. But but yeah, I have been so impressed by Trae Young through the initial stages of this playoffs, because he handled the Knicks, which had one of the best playoffs. Game one, he handles, or one of the best defenses in the regular season. He handles the 76ers, who have one of the best defenses. Like, he's doing this against elite, elite defenses. And the Hawks are probably a lot better than I thought.
James, you know, Jay mentioned that, you know, the Sixers had a slow start. It was a 42-27 first quarter. Why do you think they, like, pretty much started off slow?
I hate going here. Because it sounds like I'm discrediting the Hawks, but it does feel I love watching this Hawks team, but it just felt like Philly wasn't ready. It didn't feel like they took the Hawks seriously. And you can never like quantify that. That's why I hate saying it. But it felt like that because at the end, you watch the game leading up and you're like, oh, this Atlanta team is a bad matchup for Philly. Like, Philly's good defensively, but Atlanta has a bunch of guys that can put the ball on the floor, can get downhill, can step back and shoot. Their spacing is contagious. Their passing is contagious. It's like, for a team that's really good defensively, they're going to have to work very hard against this Hawks team. But then as the game went on, and you saw it in the final minutes, that made me think that Philly kind of just didn't wake up until the end, because they realized, well, I don't think this Hawks team is soft by any means. Like, I think mentally they're a strong team, but literally physically, I don't think they're a very imposing team. And Philly bullied them for those last few minutes. And I think it's weird because we're talking about Atlanta winning and they should feel good. But I think Philly goes into game two with momentum and feels okay about the situation, given that how those last few minutes went. They just need to kind of get tough with them, get mean with them. And I don't know. I liked what Atlanta did. I love Bogey. I love Trey. I thought Herter was okay. Collins was good. That's a good series for him. But I do think Philly is gonna figure it out. And I just think physically it's going to show and it's going to wear on Atlanta as this plays out.
I think I should give the Hawks finally credit. I've been, you know, kind of dumbing it down all season. Like, yeah, they just got to get to the playoffs. Okay, they're there. They got rid of the Knicks. Trae Young is a monster. Next tier, he is moving up the ranks. Him and Devin Booker are having an amazing coming out party. Trae with 35, 10, and 2. Was toying with this defense. You know, this is the number two defense in the NBA. You know, and the fact that whether they took him lightly or not, he got whatever he wanted in the first half. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was a weird strategy that they started Danny Green on him. And then they kind of just, you know, like, took chances. Like, okay, we're going to put Matisse on him. Okay, we're going to put Ben Simmons. And for Ben Simmons to make the comment that he feels that he's the defensive player of the year, and then also Doc Rivers to back him, I didn't see him step up and say, I want him in the entire game. I didn't see that
at
all. He
did afterward, though.
Yeah, afterward. You know what I mean? Where it was some type of sense of urgency where they were just trailing. They trailed big most of the game. You know, and Steph Curry hit some big shots. Kudos to Joel Embiid playing on a small lateral meniscus tear. I'm part of the, you know, TMC crew. I've tore my meniscus. So I was very skeptical about this choice to play. But, you know, he came out with Triple H, you know, doing the cross chop and telling people to suck it and, you know, all this other stuff. And, you know, he finished the game with 39-9-4. And if you didn't watch the game, you looked at the box score and seen that they only lost by 4, you would think this was a close game. It boiled down to that, you know, to that that fourth quarter where the Sixers was 41-29, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and they just kind of locked down. Like you mentioned, Jay, it looked like a college basketball game because the pressure was so intense. And that's where you've seen the youth and the inexperience in that Hawks team. Guys not running the baseline, guys getting, you know, kind of thugged in the backcourt and losing the ball. It was so many turnovers. And Philly almost pulled this off.
You know if Bogdanovich I mean? Like, didn't hit that huge three, Philly might have really won that.
For sure.
No, like, he gave us a meme. A he gave shot. Us the shh he, emoji.
Yeah, he gave the shh.
He misplaced his finger initially. He had to slide it over, though. He kind of.
Everybody's been doing that. Trey did it, too.
Yeah, he did.
The Hawks team is team misplaced fingers, man.
Yeah, like, I don't think I don't think they've ever had the opportunity to do it. And I think it was like, should I do it? I think they're uncertain when to do it.
They're learning how to do it. They just started beating the Pistons. Like, this is a whole new Hawks team.
That is the truth. That is the truth.
So, I think moving forward, Philly's got some decisions to make. Dwight Howard's minutes were a disaster.
Terrible. Yeah.
And I don't blame him totally, but it's like that's a really tough team to guard with a traditional big man. And obviously Embiid is going to stay in the game. Embiid's a superstar. Embiid is who you build the team around. But behind him, like, I think they might be better off just playing Simmons as their backup center.
No more all bench minutes.
And switching everything. And
let's not leave Shake Milton out there. He wasn't great either.
Yeah, then you take away some of the Trae Young stuff, and then you take away some of the wide-open threes that his supporting cast gets. Like, the Hawks are very skilled, and they will stretch you out, and they have Capella running down the middle for lobs. And so I think they have to look at Dwight Howard's role and kind of reconsider it moving forward. And I think this is a real test for Doc Rivers. Because he's been kind of inflexible in the past. He hasn't always been willing to change his rotation in the playoffs. I think he needs to be more willing to do that against this Hawks team.
I don't think he changes a thing. Jay, I forgot to mention that they shot 20 for 47 from three. I don't see that happening again. They had the hot hand on the road. You know what
but
I mean?
But to me, like, the big thing is the 47 threes. Like,
yeah, they were getting it up. They were getting up. They had clean looks. They had clean looks. They were sharing the ball, sharing the sugar, as my man AJ Diggs would say. And, you know, pretty much knocking them down when they needed to. Let's talk about that lob to seal the deal.
Sealed the deal. Yeah, I tweeted it sealed the deal.
What was he doing, man? I can't believe he threw that. And wow.
I think it was hunting a foul. And I was so nervous for Collins because I'm like, okay, if he gets this, I don't know how he's going to land. Because it was one of those, like, impossible catches. It was very high, but this dude is also, like, 6'9", 6'10".
A leaper.
Long arms, the reach. It wouldn't be crazy. If it was somebody 6'3", it would look kind of otherworldly. But when he came down, I was just like, wow, oh my fucking God. You know what I mean?
That was like, nasty.
That was the play.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So you guys feel the Sixers are in, you know, they shouldn't be rattled by this.
I think they should be nervous without question. I just don't think that it's like it's time. There's no reason to freak out. I think as the game went on, the blueprint showed itself. You have to be physical with this team. You have to be physical on the perimeter. You can't let guys get right past you because they move the ball too well. They shoot too well. I think you have to almost pick up at half court. I don't know about full court trap the whole game. You can't do that, but you have to like be in them, because if you look at Atlanta, I mean, yes, we love Bogey, we love Trey, people like Herter, but it's a very small backcourt. Like in terms of just, like I was saying earlier, they're not imposing, and Philly has some imposing aggressive guys. And I just think they need to utilize that, wear this team out. And I think it'll show as the series goes on. I think Atlanta will wear out and it will show, to your point, Trey. I don't know if they shoot as well as this goes on.
Yeah, ball pressure is so huge.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have Trey out there feeling comfortable. You can't have Bogdanovich out there feeling comfortable. You can't have John Collins open for threes. You can't have any of that. And like, this Philly defense to me is as good a defense as there is in the entire league. But they really need to be up in those guys. And I've just been really impressed with the Hawks, though. I can't really say enough about them, because this is an unproven team. They've got Hunter's did not play. Like, they've got Herter out there making big shots and turning out around to quiet the 76ers bench. They got Bogdanovich out there looking like he's played in big NBA games his entire career. They've got Trae Young in his first playoff appearance, really controlling games, game after game, and being a villain on the road, doing it on the road in Philly too. So they've just had a really mature start to their playoffs that I didn't necessarily anticipate.
Moving along, we got our game 7. Luka versus Kawhi. What'd you think about, the Mavericks start, James?
Luka was doing Luka, and he got off to a tremendous start, as he has pretty much all series. He died down. I'm sure we'll talk to that. For Dallas, for me, when the dust settled and this series is over, every question we had about Dallas showed. Missed a lot of open threes. Could the role players step up? Could they be consistent? Yep. And you look in that third quarter, obviously the run happened in the third, but there was a point where it looked like the role players were finally going to like get into a rhythm. I think Finney Smith hit a bucket, Boban hit a bucket, KP hit a bucket. And then Luka kind of just shoots two crazy deep threes, which, again, it's Luka, and like you live with that. But it was just the timing seemed off. And then he did a back down turnaround, which, again, Luka, he's hit him. But the timing was just weird for that. And then from there, he inserted himself, settled, and the Mavs were never really able to find that synergy again. And I think that hurt them. And it's like a team that it's one star. You hope the role players show up. Tim Hardaway, I think in game 5, he struggled and then got going late, and they ended up winning that. He played okay. Finney Smith was solid. Boban was solid. But it's like you're trading twos for threes with some of these guys. And the Clippers shot well. And I thought their role players, we could talk about Reggie Jackson, Luke Kennard, Marcus Morris, Pistons West. They stepped up, man. And I just think what we all worried about with Dallas, it showed in the most critical time of the season.
Yeah, I felt like Luka was special, especially early on. Like that first quarter, he was ridiculous, hitting step back threes. And I felt like the Mavericks were very wobbly at the start, and he kind of kept them in. They couldn't stop the Clippers at all. They were playing Boban and playing his own. And I mean, props to Ty Lue. Like, he figured it out. He figured it out. Serge wasn't available. Go super small. Zubats only played 3 minutes. They played Marcus Morris at center. They kind of capitalized on all of the defensive versatility that you have with Kawhi and Paul George and Marcus Morris and Batum and Terrence Mann. Mm-hmm. They dusted off Luke Kennard. You know, like they made decisions that I don't think were very obvious at the start of the series. And I give Ty Lue a lot of credit for that. He really coached a great series. And by the end, I felt like they figured out the Mavericks. And Dallas just couldn't stop that team. Like, there was, and Kawhi was fantastic. Like, Luka had to be so good every single possession for Dallas to even come close to winning. He had 46 points and 14 assists and like had two like very quick dry spells, and they both doomed the Mavericks. And
that was pretty much the case the whole series.
Yeah.
And that's going to show in the end, you would think. And again, unless Luka just went to another world that he could go to, and he didn't do that. Like you said, there was two dry spells that cost him. But I mean, this Clippers thing, we always focus on Kawhi and PG, but they went out to try to get deeper, and they did, and it showed. And the league best 3-point shooting showed up when it needed to show up. And yeah, credit to Ty Lue. I thought that was a great point, Jay. They drained Luka. He got tired, and there was no question about that. And I think some of that stuff in the third quarter showed. I thought he was phenomenal for most of the series, but he was pretty bad.
He looked exhausted, man. He looked like he had nothing left. And I get it. He's got to do it every single possession. He played 45 minutes in the closeout game, barely got any time for a rest. But it showed at the end, like the weight he carried was just too much. It almost felt like one of those James Harden performances early in his career. You know, like mm-hmm. deep in a series, he's been carrying ISO ball the entire series. And at the end, it's like, that carries a huge burden. And by the end of that series, you could tell Doncic was just like, he wasn't as fresh as the guys on the other side.
I think that was a great comparison as far as the Harden, you know what I mean, early on, because, you know, although his team does contribute, you know, to a lot of things, he carries most of the scoring load. And I think Kawhi Leonard took this matchup very personally. He knew what he had to do. And if he wasn't aggressive, this game could get out of their hands real quick, especially how this series had been going, where the away team had been getting all the wins, you know? So I thought Terrence Mann was good. And to triple down on you guys' comment about Tyronn Lue, you know, making adjustments, I think he doesn't get enough credit for it. I know we scream, you know, Carlisle and, you know, Spoelstra and, you know, those other coaches, but Ty Lue, you know, he was pretty cool and calm and collective as jokes flew and, you know, saying Clippers would be Clippers and, you know, they got, you know, it sucks that they had to go to seven games, but they did what they had to do. You know what I mean? And the team stepped up. Luka's free throw woes were huge.
Insane.
You know what I mean? He missed some important free throws, you know what I mean? That could have kept his game in.
Yeah, that was weird.
In pretty much in contest of like trying to get back into the game. And I thought, you know, Ty Lue, you know, bringing Reggie Jackson into the starting lineup was huge. Reggie played exceptional, great minutes for them, especially making some big shots in game seven as well. And their bench, you know, the Clippers bench just outscored. You know, they were all locked in and focused. Big game from, you know, the Morris twin, knocking down, spreading the floor and, you know, using him sparingly as, you know, a big man and going small. So, you know, kudos to the Clippers, surviving to live another day. Would have been crazy for the Clippers to lose on the 20th anniversary where Iverson stepped over Tyronn Lue, because the jokes would have been crazy. Like, with the internet would have broke, you know what I mean? Like a double whammy. So they got to dodge that. You know, Kawhi Leonard finished 28-10-9. Just super locked in, man. Like, so I think that it's going to be a fun matchup between them and the Jazz.
That could be a great matchup, man.
That's what I was saying. In the Jazz are getting tested, you know what I mean?
And it's such a different series for the Clippers. Yeah. Like, they had to go small against Dallas. They had to really maximize like all their long wings. And now it's like, okay, what are you going to do with Rudy Gobert?
You got to stay home on the role players.
What are they going to do with, you know, Kawhi Leonard? So unless, you know, Paul George wakes up and
Joe Ingles, you know, the Kawhi stopper, maybe.
Not saying that Paul George hasn't been.
He is the PG stopper.
I'm going to have some microscope glasses on that, you know what I mean, to focus on that matchup.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone?
Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Moving on to the Harden update. We got James Harden has been diagnosed with right hamstring tightness. He's listed as out for game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals versus Milwaukee. Now it's from Nets PR. What'd you guys think about that? You know what I mean? During that game, it was the first 48 seconds of the game and Harden left.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. I assumed it was what it came to be just simply because he walked off and you'd known that he's been dealing with a hamstring issue. It's unfortunate. Everybody's been waiting to see this, the healthy Nets versus the Milwaukee Bucks. And I mean, we got a good game. We got an interesting game that's setting up what hopefully will be a good series. But I mean, for him to be out for game 2 and with them having the star power that they do, I wonder if they're just a little bit more lenient. I don't know if lenient's the right word, but a little more cautious with bringing James back because they might feel they have enough to get it done. I think obviously game 2 will dictate that. Hot take, right?
Right.
But I'm curious. I want to keep an eye on that because if Harden's not feeling well, there's no. You got to play the long game. Like, I know this is Bucks Nets, and it feels like the winner is going to win it all. But it still is the second round of the playoffs.
Right. You don't cash all the way in this early. Yeah. I honestly made a joke. I thought he was just going to the bathroom. I'm like, come on, James. Like, you waited this long to get the nerves out and go take a whiz real quick. But it was obviously an injury, and you know, an injury that has happened early on that made him miss 20 plus games. So wishing him a speedy recovery. And you know, I think the Nets will try to, you know, adjust. I mean, they've had their stay ready crew throughout the season, you know, and guys have been able to step up, and you know, they're also missing Jeff Green. So they'll do their best against the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, they still have number 7 and number 11. So those are good problems to have. And we'll monitor that closely as the week goes on.
I want to see what the Bucks do to score better. Like, their offense was gross in game 1.
They were gross.
6 for 30 from behind the arc. Like, the Nets are not they don't have a good defense, but
I thought Blake Griffin did a good job.
Blake Griffin was really good, man. James, how shocked are you? I know you covered him in Detroit. I know you got to be surprised.
I wrote the story before the whole spiel went down that he wasn't as washed as people thought. He was just asked to be the man still, and it looked very bad. I'm surprised by how effective he's being, and I'm curious to see if this was it. But I am a little surprised simply because he's starting. He's moving a little bit better. His shot has come back. That was the thing in Detroit. His shot just absolutely went away. But it was also, again, he was the focus with a bunch of 19-year-olds. But I am a little shocked. Yes, the shot. I thought the shot might have been toast with the knee. Like, people talk about the lift with the legs. No, I thought the shot was gone with the legs. And he's found it. Shout out to Blake for that.
He's out there guarding Giannis.
Look, he was defending. Man. I mean, that was the thing, playing the bait. I know Giannis just fell in love with this three because he could knock it down, but that's not his best. That's not his strength. You know what I mean? And like, honestly, no.
And Blake knows that. Blake's smart.
And that's the thing. He's baiting him into it. And then also in another situation, I think Bud has to use Giannis in a better situation to get him off the ball and use Middleton and Holiday to set Giannis up and probably use him sparingly at the 5. I thought Brook Lopez was really good for them, but then also, you know, PJ Tucker also played some good defense on Kevin Durant early on, but then, you know, KD does what he does, and he was just kind of just working out there. And then Kyrie was great, and they went away from him, which was kind of weird, but then they found him again, and, you know, kind of pick and choose the pockets. But like, the Nets guys, you know, their bench just, you know, came in and did what they did. Mike James was exceptional. You know, Bruce Brown played bigger than he always does. And, you know, James, first saying, you know about Bruce Brown and what he can do. Yeah. He can guard 1 through 5. He's an energy guy. Lurks around the short corner, cleans up, eats with his hands, and is
one of the nicest guys in the world, too. I want to put that out there for people that don't know. One of the coolest dudes you'll ever meet.
Easy to work with. Boom.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, kudos to Coach Nash. You know what I mean? Like, just being cool as a fan. I mean, most people say, well, you got Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant, and, you know, you're supposed to win. And it's like, it's not easy micromanaging all these personalities. And he, you know, he's getting a feel for his players, and they trust him and believe in him. And, you know, they're playing with a lot of pride at home. And, you know, in game two, we'll see how the Bucks come out. You know what I mean? If they shoot better or if they make some type of adjustments. I think it's real. They do miss the presence of Dante DiVincenzo out there.
Which is weird to say, but yeah.
I mean, huge. The last regular season matchup, he had 15 rebounds, 10 offense. And then also Brent Forbes had 14. He only had 6 points last game.
And he's so important for them because, number one, he can guard and he's super athletic. Yeah. And two, he can shoot. And so they played Jeff Teague 14 minutes. Like,
that was a big problem.
Teague is – he's just not going to be a threat on offense.
He gave them nothing.
He's not going to be a threat on offense. That's a nice way to say washed. He's not going to be able to switch onto Durant or do much of anything against Irving. Like, Jeff Teague is going to give you very little in this series. And that's part of the reason why – DiVincenzo is such a huge loss because
he
plays a big role for them. And there's just the drop off from him to Teague is enormous. They got to figure out what to do with that. I think it's probably going to be more Connaughton minutes. It's like Connaughton only played 20 minutes. Giannis only played 35. Middleton only played 36. And those all have to go way up.
you got to change that. That's like, I know Bud after the game, everybody said I don't know if somebody asked him or if he just came out and said it, but he's like, we need to keep those guys fresh. It's like, no, man, like, this is going to be very likely your hardest series. Like, this is, I think most would agree, this is the finals. Maybe, I mean, there's people in LA and Utah that'll disagree. But this feels like the finals. This is, you get over this hump, then maybe you have some opportunities to rest those guys going forward, especially with whatever happens with Philly and Atlanta. It's going to – I don't know, man. For Milwaukee, this is very – I like this team, and I know they haven't given us much reason to trust them at this point in the season. But this feels like the Miami where they came out and couldn't hit a three to save them their life, and then in game two hit 12 in the first quarter or whatever that was. Like, the firepower is there, and I feel like – I love Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn is going to – it's going to be a dogfight. We all know that. It's not a hot take. But I think there's opportunity there to put up big points on Brooklyn. And I think Milwaukee just has like this weird – I don't know if they ease into series, if they need a feeler game, whatever it is. But this gives me big Miami game one, game two vibes where they struggled against them and then put up like franchise record.
But here's the thing, in game two. Can't afford dry spells against Brooklyn.
And you can't.
You can't.
Yeah.
Because even without James Harden, they are going to score. Like that offense is so potent. To have Joe Harris on that team is just totally unfair. It's outrageous. It is, and then to have Blake Griffin play like he did and have that luxury. And so I just think they can't afford any more 6-for-30 games. Like, they need to hit threes.
No.
They need to put Giannis in good situations. And he was 16-for-24.
That guy missed. He like was okay.
Yeah. but the shooting around him needs to be much better. And why Jeff Teague? I just don't get it. I watched Jeff Teague play for half a season this year in Boston, and he was not good enough to be in the rotation during the regular season, even though he was.
He's being so nice to Jeff Teague on this pod. It's like, it's the nicest ways of saying it's
watched.
He's a Jeff
Teague apologist right now.
I respect it.
Yeah, get him the hell out of that series.
There's a lot of thought into
it's Budenholzer season. It will not be Budenholzer season much longer if he continues to lean on Jeff Teague.
It's not 2015, bud. Come on, man.
And right, look, they don't have many other options, but it's just like up the minutes for the guys in the rotation.
Yeah, play Pat more. Like, that's
– yeah.
Jay, I would love to soft diss, Jeff Teague all night. We need to move on. This subject is a little bit touchy. And has kind of shaken up the league a little bit just because of how it was, you know, thrown out there. But Jason Kidd and the Blazers, I wanted to highlight a little bit of, you know, Jason Kidd's career coaching record right now as a head coach. He's 183-190. So it's not like, you know, just something that just like a must have or a mandatory hiring. What circled around when it first came out, you know, from an article by Chris Haynes, that Dame endorsed Jason Kidd as he's the guy I want. And Blazer fans lost it. You know what I'm saying? They issued out petitions, threatened, you know, to cancel their season tickets in hiring this guy, you know. But Jason Kidd and Damian Lillard have a history of, you know, the same agent. Oakland. They're both from Oakland. And, you know, also Dame looks up to, you know, Jason Kidd as, you know, one of the GOATs of the point guards from his city, but not only to play this game. But Jason Kidd also has a past that is very frowned upon and has been swept under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to continue his success in this mm-hmm. game. So I wanted to start with, you know, first of all, Terry Stotts being fired. What is your thoughts on that, Jay King? And so, then James, I wanted you to answer on what's the future for Damian Lillard after this?
Yeah, the most interesting, first of all, I think Terry Stotts is a very good coach, was a very good coach in Portland for a long time, maximized or came close to maximizing a lot of imperfect teams. I understand why they moved on from him, because they've been kind of treading water for years now. And, you know, the loss to Denver without Jamal Murray, without Will Barton, with, you know, Faku and Austin Rivers as a starting backcourt, that's just not going to cut it. I understand why they moved on. The most interesting part to me is the Damian Lillard sort of power play throughout this. You know, the Portland comes out, they lose, and he hits Instagram and puts out some song lyrics that suggest
called it the great Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah,
right. I hated that so much because it was from Dame. I'm like, he's just built
that's
different.
Not Dame. No, not Dame. That's not you, man. Like,
I mean, hey, every dog has his day.
I know,
right?
It's tough.
And when it bothers you, instead of getting a diary, you go to Instagram.
Yeah, like he was the last star I would have ever expected to pull out the like AIM away message type Instagram post about how he needs things to change or wants out or whatever it was. And then he comes out on top of it and shares exactly who he wants as the head coach. And for me, I'm like, okay, he is putting a whole lot of pressure on that organization to go out and get the guys he wants. He's not even just having a conversation with the owners and saying, this is who I want. Give me Jason Kidd or Chauncey Billups was the other name he mentioned to Shams Charania. He came out and did it publicly.
Yeah, he's telling reporters.
And told reporters. And it's like, now if they hire anyone else, now, you know, it's like they hired somebody who wasn't Dame's guy.
Can I take it from there?
Because
this is where my hot take comes in.
Yeah,
you
I need to
set
hot
it
take.
Up perfect. I have no merit, no basis. This is James returning to Basket Buds for the first time in a few weeks. I need to get my shit off.
Yes.
Floor is yours.
I think Dame knew Kidd wouldn't do it. And this is his way of getting out. Think Chauncey's going to come to Portland.
Ooh. This is a hot take. I like this.
I don't think Chauncey's it's going to look like the front office is going against Dame wishes, because I live in Detroit where the fan base here really wants Chauncey to get some type of prominent role. And the reason he hasn't had one in Detroit is because from what I've heard, he's wanted to like skip the line while the Pistons wanted guys with experience. And Chauncey's finally getting his experience. He's on Ty Lue's bench. I don't know how much Portland is on the Chauncey Billups train. I have no idea. That's a better question for Jason Quick and Shams. And
oh, they don't want him either, because they've researched his past as
well. Yeah, exactly. So to me, it feels like this is Dame saying who he wants, knowing that they're unable to get them or have no interest in these guys, So then it doesn't look like he's forcing his way out, that they're not doing enough to keep him and to keep him happy. And I hate to say this about Damian Lillard because I love you, Dame. This is a
conspiracy theory. I like it.
If you listen to this, Dame, this is just me spewing. I was bored one night and this came to me. I love you. I don't know if I believe this, but this is what my mind conjured up at 1:30 in the morning.
I love you.
And but here's the thing too, that I'm on right now. If the player wants to move on, let him move on. I'm tired of this whole loyalty or this blind loyalty or unwritten rules in the league. If there's plenty of guys that want to be, you know, in certain situations, and I think that he's given 9 years to that city. And if they want to find him a new situation, then help him out. You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, you don't let your players rot away in the franchise. And I think that, you know, if it got to the extremity of, you know, Blazer fans wanting to cancel their, you know, their season tickets or drawing a line with the, you know, the Jason Kidd endorsement, then so be it. It's kind of like the Wario meme of I won, but at what cost, you know? But I wanted to highlight something very important, and I didn't want to, you know, breeze over this because I had a conversation and it made me take a step back and look at it in a certain situation. So I wanted to say this about Jason Kidd. We can't keep giving chances. We have to be mindful of women who have been on the receiving end of violence from men. Also, it shouldn't matter if you know the person or not. People shouldn't care about things only when they're experienced it or someone they know experienced it. We should know right from wrong. We should care about people's well-being and safety regardless. The thing is, also in this situation, we do have to allow people to atone at some point, right? But if I'm Jason Kidd, I would come out and apologize and start doing some work with the domestic violence programs. And then from there, you get the community behind you and prove that you're really serious about this. And then we can start thinking about head coaching jobs consideration, because we've swept this, you know, everyone has loved Jason Kidd as a player, but it's also a stain on the league if we're, you know, cracking down on the active players, but not holding everybody to the same standards.
Preach.
I feel bad going back to Dame talk after that, but
you preach though, Trey, I agree in lockstep. Preach.
Agree 100%.
I love Jason Kidd, by the way.
I do too. I wore a
Jason
forearm.
Kidd, Dallas, Jason, the number 5 Dallas jersey was my first jersey. You know what I mean? Like that Nike Air Zoom Flight 95 was my favorite shoe. You know what I'm saying? But I got to keep it real on that. You know what I mean? Like it's no place in the game for that. And then also,
not trying to write your wrongs.
I need to do a personal, you know, a better job at understanding it and not just saying like, well, you know, we need to let it go because we're not thinking about the people that are really in the situation and who it affects and how it still matters. You know what I mean? Like if the NBA is really against it, then we need to really be about it and hold those accountable.
So I just think, like, I get it if he wants out. I 100% get it. He's been there for years. They have squandered the chance to put an appropriate supporting cast around him. He has watched all these other superstars get another superstar, and he's had like some flawed rosters. He made it to the Western Conference Finals, but that's as deep as he's gone. I get it if he wants out, if he's tired of trying to win in Portland, if he's reached the point where like Kevin Garnett reached after being extremely loyal in Minnesota for many years. I get that. I don't know. After years of him like going about everything the right way, it's just weird to me the way the last couple weeks or the last week has gone, the last few days. And I just, that situation went from like, that's Dame's team to all of a sudden everyone's looking at that like, I wonder if someone could pry Dame away.
Yeah.
I wonder what his deal is there. How concrete, you know, his commitment to that team is at this stage. And they have a lot of pressure over in Portland right now. Like, if they want Dame to stay, they're going to have to hire the right guy. They're going to have to make changes. You know, Nurkic was out in his post-game press conference after they lost. And he was like, yeah, I want to stay if it's the right situation. And someone asked him, I think, like, what's the right situation? He's like, this isn't it.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
Hey, okay,
that sounds like a clutch agenda to me, but I don't want to say it, man.
This isn't it. Like that. There's something going on over there. It's interesting. And if Damian Lillard is free, or if he is on the market, I mean, then that is a huge, huge deal that could shift the entire league. It's really eye-opening what's going on over there, because I'd never expected Dame to be the next disgruntled star, but it's pretty clear he's very frustrated over there.
There's two things. Before I ask you guys a question, again, Dame, I love you. You've given me much joy in watching you over these years, but I'm a little not perturbed, but just Portland's main thing. We all look at it. Yeah, the rosters haven't been great, but like defensively, they've just been absolutely atrocious for quite some time. And when is somebody just going to be like, you know, it's the worst defensive backcourt in the league, and Dame's the worst defender in that backcourt. And it's just like, yeah, things need to change. But he's not really what's held them back is his worst flaw. So it's like, I get it. I love Dame too. I want to see him win. I want to show him these moments. But like, he's not to blame. It's like almost Giannis when everybody's going at Bud in the playoffs. It's like, well, this guy can't shoot, and he's hurting his team by not being able to shoot. But let's all just pile on Giannis or on Bud. Let's all pile on the rest of the roster. And that's fair. I get it. These are the stars. These guys put up 50. Like when you watch them, they're doing all that they can. But when you watch Dame on the other end, man, like he doesn't even try sometimes. And it's the worst defensive backcourt in the league. And he's the worst defender of the two.
But
go ahead.
My thing is like Dame is your guy.
For sure.
That defensive backcourt has been a problem for a long time defensively. Like, trade CJ.
And that's where I was going to say.
Yeah.
That was my next point, my question for you guys. If you're Dame, do you allow Portland to see, before you make any brash decision, do you allow Portland to go and shop CJ and somebody, just go shop CJ and see what comes back? Or do you just make up your mind and you just are done with Portland? I think you at least got to give the let's see what we can get for CJ thing.
I think you hear out all options. And if they can't move Dame and get the right pieces back, then they just gut it and just blow it all up and just start fresh. The whole Rockets will get down because you can't have a disgruntled superstar coming back.
No.
Not into that. You know what I mean? Because it just becomes a mess. And you know, I think that the owner's on board, but then also we need to put an eyeball on Neil O'Shea. So, you know, that's going to be the real focus.
That's a crazy. I never thought this was going to be a topic on this podcast.
Like, never, man.
Whether Dame wanted out and how much pressure the organization has right now to keep him happy.
It sucks because he was like the one guy, man.
But I get it.
No, I get it too.
I totally get it too.
I get it too. I'm not mad at him, but it just sucks. You just hoped that there was one guy.
Steph's still that guy. All we got is Steph.
Yeah,
right?
Steph's still that guy.
And Steph we trust, or hashtag Steph better.
Extend Steph, Warriors. I ain't trying to do all this.
It's one of those extensions that he's up for. I think he's going to be making $59 million in 1 year. That's nuts.
I'll throw in my allowance. I'll help out. Leave Steph in Golden State.
Just keep it pure, right?
Yes.
All right. Last topic. Quick predictions. Jazz versus Clippers. Who you got, Jay?
Ooh. Ooh. You know what? I got the Jazz.
Jay picked the Jazz?
Wow.
I picked the Jazz. I don't think the Clippers have quite the level of playmaking to take advantage of Gobert. And if you don't have like top level playmaking, then he's just such a detriment. And I think that's a really good matchup for Gobert. I think it will put a lot of stress on guys like Royce O'Neal, guys like Joe Ingles to really play D. But like Donovan Mitchell is going to be a problem for those switches. You know, it's switching against Luka, you can at least try to keep him in front of you sometimes.
Yeah.
And obviously, Luka's better than Donovan Mitchell. Let me just put that out there. And he's – Donovan Mitchell won't have as good a series as Luka did against him. But he's also, like very different cover. And I'm not sure they'll be able to keep him in front. And if you can't keep in front while switching, then it's just like Mike Conley's going to be draining threes and Joe Ingles is going to be draining threes. And they just have so many weapons. I wouldn't have picked – Utah against everybody, but I like this matchup for them.
Yeah, I'm with Jay for a lot of what he said. I'm going to pick Utah in six. And I just wonder, it's hard, like you said, Jay, it's hard to stop Luka. But for a guy like Marcus Morris, that's being able to play that isolation defender and being able to do some nice things against guards, playmakers, and bigs. That's what he brings. Now, I don't know if defensively they're going to be able to stay home against Utah, which is going to be the big thing, right? Guys are going to dribble, penetrate, kick out. You don't worry about that as much with Dallas, who coming into the league weren't a great three-point shooting team. Utah, the exact opposite. I just defensively and in coverages, are the Clippers going to have enough to, one, not get completely broke down off the dribble, to let guys like Mitchell and Conley get in the paint and dictate the ball movement, dictate shots at the rim? And I think they are able to do just enough to create for the guys that are just going to knock down shots on the outside. I just think for guys like Marcus Morris, you want to be more in isolation type setting at this point. And I think Utah is just a different beast, and it's going to be tough for a lot of those guys to stay home and stay disciplined against a team like that.
I got the Clippers in seven.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Yeah. The West is wide open.
It's wide open.
The whole league is wide open right now.
Here's the thing. I don't like betting against Kawhi Leonard.
I'm not mad at that.
I think the bubble situation was, you know, an interesting one because, you know, you got guys that were just dealing with different things and there was a lot of distractions. But
and he looks Kawhi Leonard. Very rested. Like he looked very good this whole, like you weren't questioning if Kawhi's tired.
He's even killed, man. Yes. I don't really see him, you know, outside, you know, overly emotional or anything. I think he just plays. And I think that's the thing. And Paul George is due. He's due. I know it's funny to make jokes about him and you know, Joe Ingles, but he's due. And I'm ready for him to show up. And I think this is the series that he shows up.
I really think anyone could win the West.
And like, oh, absolutely. It's wide open.
I'm not convinced there's any like obvious favorite either.
Well, while you mention that, who do we have for Nuggets Suns?
I'm going to go Suns.
Yeah, the Suns are... They should win. But man, like, Jokic is just so tough. And I don't know. I'm going Nuggets. I'm going Woo-hoo. Nuggets in that one. I will probably want to change my mind once I see Chris Paul like against Austin Rivers in game one. Like that will probably make me want to revisit this entirely, or Devin Booker just torturing Faku Campazzo and switches. but Jokic is just like, he's playing at a level that is just different. Rare right now.
Yeah, it's different.
And I think, and if Will Barton's back, which he might be for game one, that gives a huge boost to Denver, a needed boost to Denver. I think I'm going with Denver. That's crazy. I really am going to hate myself for this pick.
I think the Suns.
I already do.
I think the Suns are disciplined enough defensively that they're not going to get obliterated on the Jokic top of the key. Jokic looking for cutters, like it's going to happen. It's Jokic. That's what's going to happen. But I don't think they get obliterated from that. And I still think, I've been saying it for a while now. I said it in the regular season when Murray went down. I eventually think the lack of another creator next to Jokic is in the catch up. I don't know if Phoenix is that team. I'm hoping it's that team just because I really enjoy watching Phoenix and I want to see them keep going. But I do feel like eventually at some point, the lack of no Murray, the lack of another true creator, playmaker, scorer is going to catch up to Denver. And I'm going to say it's going to be this series I just think Paul and Devin are too much. Ayton's been great. I mean, you got good role players and Mikal. That Suns team, man, it's one of the greatest. Like we talk about just like complete transformations on some of these teams from where the Suns were to where they are. Like that's a deep team.
Well, they dismantled the Lakers, man.
I loved every second of that series. I'm sorry. to my LA people, Trey.
Hey, it's okay. I'm gonna roll with the Suns, man. I got the Suns in six.
Let's go.
The Nuggets, they might be the favorites if Jamal Murray had stayed healthy.
1,000%
At least in the West. I think the Nets Bucks winner will be the favorite. Probably the Nets. But yeah, they would have such a good chance if Murray were healthy. It's really a shame that he's not.
Sucks.
All right, that'll do it for the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. Make sure you subscribe to the Athletic. Get all the best coverage of sports in the NBA playoffs right there on the internet. And make sure all of our podcasts ad-free, or get the one with the ads and only support that way. Check out work from Law Murray, Eric Name, and Alex Schiffer. And support those guys while their teams are still in the playoffs.
For James Edwards, Jay King.
This has been an episode of Basket Buds.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.